This is Pro Bono Radio. Hi there, I'm Waylon.
I'm Adam.
I'm Michelle.
And today we're going to be talking about proportional representation.
All right, so what this episode is about, so it's inspired by Justin Trudeau's promise in 2015 to make 2015 the last election under First Past the Post. And BC also just recently had a referendum on proportional representation. So we're basically going to be talking about what that means.
How does our electoral system currently work with the First Past the Post system?
Well, right now, so we have a Senate and a House of Commons, and the Senate has 105 seats. And the House has 338. So those are the ones that we care about when we talk about proportional representation. The House of Commons representatives are the ones that we vote for in general elections. And then the party with the most seats forms government. So the country is divided into 338 geographical areas, and then each area elects one representative in the House. So under First Past the Post, each district elects one candidate. And it's just whoever gets the most votes wins in that area. And they can be either independent or with a party. You also don't need an absolute majority, which would be like more than 50%. You just need to have the most votes. So even if you have like 30%, as long as that's more than everyone else, you'll get the seat in the House.
So that's kind of what we saw with like the most recent election results in Ontario, where we had the Ford PC government come in, and I don't know what the exact numbers were, but I feel like they've got close to like 70% of the seats, and they did not get anywhere close to 70% of the popular vote. So there's definitely that sort of big discrepancy there.
Yeah, I think actually Doug Ford has 40% of the votes, but his party has 61% of the seats. Okay. So yeah, that's a great example of the way our system works now.
So then why, I mean, it's been a popular narrative to hear about the inequality that First Past the Post can sort of maintain. It's a pretty clear argument when you say Doug Ford got less than 50% of the vote, and yet he has a majority government. I think we've seen recently that he's been able to table legislation and sort of just pass any whim that he has recently. He's been busy cutting what he wants to cut and reapportioning what he wants to reapportion, almost unfettered. So why, I guess, are we still using this system?
Well, there are some perks to it. Some people point to having one clear representative for a specific riding as being a good thing. So it gives voters a clear person to go to if they have concerns. And you also know exactly who is accountable for your region. A lot of people also point to efficiency. So because we usually have majority governments, it makes it really easy to enact legislation. So that's definitely some plus sides.
Just like a desire to maintain the status quo, I guess, as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So as you mentioned, BC was the most recent province to hold a referendum on electoral reform and to propose a few different alternatives to First Past the Post. Ultimately, the referendum didn't pass, like proportional representation didn't pass. They elected to stay with First Past the Post.
Yeah, they did decide to stay.
But I guess maybe we can dive in a little bit to what were the options that they had proposed to them, or what were the potential new systems that were going to replace First Past the Post?
Yeah, so all of the systems sort of have one main objective, which is just to make the party share of the votes in the House equal to the proportional number of votes that they actually won across the province or the country or wherever it's being enacted. And that generally involves electing more than one member for each district. So basically, if you get 40% of the votes, then you get 40% of the seats. So the three systems that were proposed in BC, the first one is dual member. It's sort of a modern take on a two-member system, which was used in the past in PEI and in BC. It's never actually been implemented anywhere, so we don't really know what it looks like in practice. But basically what happens is you take two adjacent ridings, you combine them together to form one, but then you give them two representatives. Some big rural ridings would stay the same and just have one representative and not be merged. But then you elect one person under first past the post to be your local representative. And then the second seat is given to a remaining candidate who has support in the area, but is just distributed in a way so that the overall seat share matches closely the vote share by that party. The second type is the rural-urban. So it combines two systems. In rural areas, they'd have a mixed member system, which means you elect just over half of your representatives using first past the post. And then the remaining representatives, you pick from regional candidates to reflect the popular vote. This is actually the most popular system, so I'll get more on that in a minute. But for urban voters, they would use a ranked ballot. And in BC, they proposed the single transferable vote. And the way that works is basically you rank your top choices in order of preference, and then the top-ranked candidate is elected. Usually, if a candidate gets over half of the votes, they'll be declared the winner, but that's pretty rare. So if they don't, then the candidate with the fewest votes gets dropped off, and their second choice gets given a vote. And then that's repeated until somebody has the majority.
That sounds similar. I'm not sure exactly what the process was, but that sounds similar to what the federal conservatives did when they were looking for their new leader. So I think that's how Andrew Scheer was appointed. They used a ranked ballot system. I can't remember. I remember it came down to him and Maxime Bernier. And
Everybody's favorite number two.
Yeah. Andrew Scheer.
Well, it's a pretty good system. It's what they use in Australia. So it does work sometimes. It does make it a bit harder for smaller parties to get into the House, because if they have the least votes, they get dropped. But it means that you can have more than one vote, which is kind of nice. The more popular system, though, is mixed member. It's used in 9 countries, New Zealand, Scotland, Germany. It was the most popular in the BC referendum of people who did vote for proportional representation, and in Prince Edward Island when they did their vote in 2016. So the way that one works is you have 2 candidates. So you vote for a local candidate, and then you vote for a second regional candidate, or in some areas you vote from a party list. And then the local candidates fill about 60% of the seats, and then the regional ones fill the rest. It makes the ridings a bit bigger because you have fewer local candidates, and you have to leave room for the regional ones. And the regional seats go to candidates who have support in the region, and those are the seats which make the government proportional. So some perks of this system is that it allows voters to choose representatives at a local level, but then also vote separately at a more like national level. And you can vote for 2 parties if you want. If you want one party to represent you locally and another one, you know, on a bigger scale.
So this seems to solve the issue of having maybe a party leader that you'd like to vote for, but maybe not a local representative, or vice versa, having a local representative who's, say, Liberal that you really like more than the other local candidates, but maybe on the national stage you prefer like the NDP or the Conservative leader or the Green leader or something. You can have your interests represented in both fashions.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, if you love Justin Trudeau and want him to be Prime Minister, but you don't like the Liberal candidate in your area, you'd rather an independent, it gives you an option to vote for both of them.
I wonder, like, if a system like that would allow for a lot more independent candidates to be successful. I feel like it's very rare that you see an independent who is elected into the House. They usually have like 1 or 2 seats at most in any given legislature.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I know that a lot of the advocates for proportional representation bash first past the post because it incentivizes strategic voting. So people are de-incentivized to vote for independents because they know that they're probably not going to win a seat. So it's more worth their while to vote for the big parties.
It's interesting, too, how that maybe plays into the parties and their planning and when they're coming up with their platforms, right? So, I mean, I feel like you typically see a battle between maybe the Liberals and the NDP to occupy sort of the center vote. And then you see, it may be different now that Maxime Bernier has his own party, but there, you know, there might be 2 parties that are competing for some factions of the right, and to be able to carve out sort of who you represent while also strategically being able to group voters into your party by addressing their top issues. It could all get kind of difficult that way.
I remember during the last federal election, when I was in my undergrad, we had the local candidates come into the school to have a debate, and then students were allowed to ask them questions. And one of the questions that was being asked every candidate was who they would vote for if they couldn't vote for their first choice. And so it was really, you know, it was quite funny. And, you know, the Liberal candidate said the NDP, and then and when it got to the Green Party candidate, he said if he couldn't vote for his first choice, he would vote for the Green Party, because, you know, it's like it's such a common feature of, I guess, first past the post now that you wouldn't vote for the smaller party first anyway. So right.
It is interesting though how like that does those considerations come into play, right? It's not just as easy from the perspective of the voter. It's not just as easy as kind of picking who you like and who you think is going to be the best. It's a matter of considering like, okay, where are the battlegrounds? They flip flop a lot more, and it's almost a per election sort of decision. It could go either way, and just being able to vote who you want, but also ensure that who you don't want isn't going to get additional support from the faction that's sort of on the same side. So if we've got all these ideas for different forms of proportional representation, what are the main arguments in favor of changing the system? And I guess, which system do you think maybe would be the best one to replace first past the post?
Well, there's a lot of arguments for proportional representation. A lot of them are based on fairness, and that under proportional representation, all of your votes are counted. So even if you vote for a small party that isn't going to win in your area, your vote will still go towards electing someone from that party, you know, giving one of them a seat, even if it's in a different area. There's a lot of debate, though, going on right now on whether proportional representation is able to give a stable government, because it does tend to lead to minority governments. I mean, it's rare for parties to actually get more than 50% of the vote, even under first past the post, but they are able to form majority government. So people that are anti-proportional representation usually point to the amount of political parties in Canada. I think in 2011, we had 18 registered parties, but you only really hear about, you know,
the top
three
four.
Or four. Yeah. Yeah. So they claim that dividing the House up would make it a lot harder for one party to get control, and it would force coalitions, which people think are less stable and less accountable because it's a lot less clear who's really running the show and who's making all the decisions in government. And they argue the existing system works well, so why change it? But a lot of the people who advocate for proportional representation see that diversity as a good thing. Allowing more parties into government allows a lot more viewpoints to be shared. And it just means that politicians are going to have to gain new skills of learning to work together and collaborate and having a lot less confrontations. So
I wonder, sorry to cut you off there. I wonder, too, if it would actually force some of the politicians to, like you said, to get along more, right? Because you see now, like, a lot of politicians seem loath to depart from the party line, right? Or they don't want to upset the established party rhetoric on a topic. Whereas if you can't sort of retreat into that, or if there are more alternatives being expressed, it's easier to maybe kind of lump some of them in, or maybe you're more willing to be critical of some of the hardline stances that your party takes if there are more options that seem reasonable to jump onto.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I think that when you have a majority government that can pass whatever they want, they usually do what they want and sometimes can ignore what the opposition wants. But if you have a minority government, then you're forced to negotiate and to each make concessions. And it's easier to come to an agreement that both of you end up being happy with, even if it's not exactly what you wanted in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we do still see coalitions form in BC right now, right? It's the NDP and the Greens who have formed a coalition to take a minority government. The UK, I feel like it's very common to see coalition type governments formed, and sure they have inefficiencies, but I mean, at the end of the day, if it is more voices, it's more chefs in the kitchen perhaps, but they're still progressing, maybe not on Brexit, but they're still progressing in other areas, and their government hasn't totally fallen into shambles, it doesn't seem.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. And I know a lot of people point to New Zealand, which has been doing proportional representation for 22 years. They have coalition governments all the time, and they have yet to have one fall. Sometimes coalitions have government changes, like so some coalitions will break, some parties will leave, some parties will join it. So it's changing a little bit more. There's more moving pieces, but it doesn't mean the government's fallen and can't make any decisions or pass any legislation.
I guess even if you have a government who's firmly established in power, doesn't mean that your government is going to continue to work. They could just shut it down for a few weeks and then who knows?
Exactly. Yeah.
So what about, I guess, if we are opening the door to more and more parties to get their foot in to have a sort of some sort of official party status to be members of the legislature, how do we deal with more extremist parties, or what's the risk of them taking root?
Well, people against proportional representation say that it allows extremists into government, and we have seen that happen in Europe, so it's definitely a possibility. But a lot of proportional representation systems have a minimum threshold of 5%. So to get even one seat in government, you need 5% support. So it does prevent extremists who have very little support from gaining any voice in government. In my opinion, I think that having extremist parties is less a reflection of your electoral system and more of a reflection of the people in your society. So, I mean, people can vote for whoever they want to, and I would hope that they don't vote for extremists. But I don't think it's the electoral system's job to silence them. It's society and other people.
Depending on your opinion of it as well, it may help. You're almost weeding these people out, because right now we don't see many extremist parties covered. We don't see them have a big influence on government du jour. But the fact that they're still out there, and then it's more you see like the bigger parties almost misstep trying to pander to some of these, like their voices will get just loud enough to be picked up by some MP who tries to echo or tries to appease them. And then that usually incites some controversy. Whereas I think if these parties are big enough to have that type of support, then it's almost better for the issue to be brought to light. And rather than having snakes in the grass, they're just exposed and you can deal with it head on.
Yeah. And I think in areas where there's maybe a coalition that just needs a few more votes, just a couple more, if there's even one or two extremists in the government, and if they're willing to vote for whatever the coalition wants in exchange for something else, that might be where the issue is raised.
Yeah, I remember when I was in high school, I was one of those kind of like annoying political kids. And, you know, would always be talking about the different systems of government I knew. And I remember once I was, you know, waist deep in a proportional representation rant in history class. And I was talking about how great I thought it was. And then my history teacher, do you know how Hitler rose to power? And, you know, that's how Weimar Germany fell, was, you know, proportional representation and all the parties going together. And I think he's probably just, you know, wanted me to be quiet, but, yeah, ever since then, you know, there was definitely a dramatization of what had actually happened. But I always keep that in mind now, you know, it's just like a bunch of people growing together to form that kind of coalition that you're talking about. And then,
yeah, like, it's tough too, though, right? Because it's not like, I mean, extreme governments don't necessarily have to rely on proportional representation to come to power. There are ways of gaming the system. And I don't know, it is interesting. I mean, there does seem to be a very nationalistic protectionist sort of thread that has impacted a lot of elections around the world recently. And then, you know, it's not all of those votes are proportional representation set up. Obviously, like the way Trump was able to game the electoral college into a victory, there are ways of making sure that you can get to power, I guess, if you're determined enough and if you're familiar enough with the system that is going to enable it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, if you do look at, I think, the example of Hitler coming to power, I wouldn't say that it was just because of the way that their votes were counted. There was a lot of other factors,
yeah,
obviously, to consider. But yeah, that is a valid caution to, I think about when you're looking at proportional representation. But I don't think it's something that should, make you stray away from it totally, because I think the 5% threshold does make a difference.
In Canada, a lot of people, you know, we talk about the charter as one of the main purposes of the charter is protecting, I guess, like minority interests from, you know, decisions from the majority that may be against their interests. And do you think that value that's underwritten into Canadian society works? Do you think it's in contrast with proportional representation, which is a system that's very clearly geared to just model what the majority want?
I think it actually would work well with it, because having all of your rights protected, obviously there's, you know, the notwithstanding clause and all the ways to get around it, but generally having your rights protected, the charter's there to protect you from the government. So it does prevent the government from doing really terrible, stupid things usually. So I feel like that would be something that actually goes really well with proportional representation and protecting from extremists.
It does feel too like having proportional representation, like it might allow some more fringe groups, but that's not to say that they're like extremist in a negative sense, I guess. It's just maybe a different view that's not quite as popular to everyone, but it may still allow for some underrepresented or marginalized groups to have a champion within the government to start with. And I mean, even then, the party with the most power is going to be able to pursue their agenda the most freely, but just having a first sort of check and balance that's elected already, because then it's like you have to get through the other MPs that are in the House, and then you have to get through the courts if, you know, if you've pursued and it is extreme enough to warrant that sort of intervention. But it's just another check and balance. It's another way of ensuring that some minority rights or ideals are protected from the get-go. How do you think this would come about? Like, say we were to actually finally have a referendum where it was passed, or, you know, or we had a political party who claimed that they were going to change the system, who actually came through on that sort of a promise. How do you think that would, in the initial stages, like the changing stages, how do you think that would impact maybe the first election or the process leading up to it?
I think that the first election and maybe the first government formed under it might be a little difficult.
Maybe a bit of a learning curve.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bit of a realization for politicians that they have to work differently now. They're going to have to actually truly negotiate and find that common ground. And I think that the way that elections would, you know, the way that people would campaign would be a lot different. Because you're ultimately looking to make a coalition, you're not necessarily going to be demonizing the other side. You're going to be showing, you know, that you want to work with this other party or, and not another party. So, I think it would change the way that people campaign and the way that politicians work in government as well. And for the first, you know, election and a few years after that, it might be a bit difficult, but I do think it's, these are skills that our politicians can acquire fairly easily if they try hard enough.
And should, I would argue they should acquire some of these skills. I think you're right. I think it would, there would be a marked sort of impact on the brand of political parties, and especially the big three and, you know, maybe number four and number five as well. Just sort of going back to what I said about a lot of politicians sort of being loath to deviate from their party lines. I feel like there is this sort of system in place where you can rely on being the liberal candidate, and then what your personal politics are don't matter as much. Whereas in this sort of system, your personal politics probably matter even more than the party's politics. You want to sell yourself as the option, and you can't just rely on the party, especially if the party is maybe inherently not going to have as clear a path or as easy as a time gaining the seats that it does now.
Yeah, and I think at the same time, I mean, if you go with a mixed member system, which has the regional and the local candidates, the regional candidates might be able to rely more on the party, but I think that's kind of what they're for. And then the local candidates, I think it gives a lot more opportunities to smaller parties or independent people who want to serve their regions, but don't necessarily want to sign their souls away to a specific party. They just want to focus on the issues that are applicable to that particular area. So I think it would have a huge, huge change on what politics looks like.
Yeah, and you wouldn't really be able to, I know in the 2015 election, there was a big, like, anything but Harper thread that was going through. It'd be harder, I think, to rely on that kind of, you know, we're the only option advertising for your political party when, you know, everybody's vote counted in a much different way, which could be very refreshing, I think.
Okay, I guess if it was up to you guys, then what system would you stick with? First past the post? Would you go with one of the proportional representation systems, or what's your pick?
What I found really compelling about the BC referendum was that it promised that after two elections, it would review it again. So I'm all for trying new systems. I think it would be interesting to try proportional representation, probably mixed member, because it's the most popular. It seems to be the most logical. And to see what happens, you know, it's had a lot of different effects in different countries. And for Canada, or even for individual provinces, it would likely have different effects too. And I think it would take a bit of time to get used to, but I'd be interested to see what happens under proportional representation, especially in a country that's so diverse.
I'm a little bit defensive of first past the post. I think that part of it comes just from, you know, the fact that it's a very Canadian thing. It's a very parliamentary thing. And sometimes I get, you know, up in arms when people are, loath to say that there's anything better out there. But one of the things I do like about first past the post is, I guess, how accessible, I mean, in theory, the members of the legislature are, you know, the people who are being voted in even on a federal level are people from your community who are, you know, seem to be very close. Definitely, I think it can be gamed in a way to, you know, support the status quo and potentially could use a little shaking up. But I guess like the efficiency argument that you said earlier, Michelle, I don't think is to be, I guess, understated. And then it's a good way to get things done, a good way to settle things.
Yeah, that was a feeling that I would say that I shared with you. Is I think growing up, I figured you need a majority government in order to actually get things done to the degree that you need a consensus. And it's very difficult to get when it's, you know, a 51-49. I mean, even looking to some of the recent, like the recent happenings in the United States where, you know, a couple of their votes came down to three members and being able to convince everyone in your party to stay on was so key. Just having a contrasting party who is almost as powerful as you and who's just seems to want to make sure either that you can't do what you want or they're just so diametrically opposed in what they want that there doesn't seem to be any common ground. And then things just stall, right? Nothing progresses. But I think I've sort of been converted more to appreciating a proportional system of representation. And for me, it comes down to is kind of the wasted vote. Like if you didn't vote the party who won, then your vote is discarded. It counted and it came up short. And now we're not going to consider your views or what you think is the proper way that the country should govern itself. And I do think that it is important to maintain that voice and to maintain that process, because maybe that helps increase voter turnout, right? Because there is a segment of the population who just feels as though their voice doesn't matter. It's not worth contributing to the process, because if you vote or if you know that maybe your candidate or your party is less likely to win, then you don't feel as though opinions and any energy you would put into this are actually going to be appreciated or are actually going to be reflected in the system and in the government that does come to power. I also have a little bit of a bias towards the rural urban proportional representation. And maybe this is just because I did grow up in a fairly rural environment, but maybe this is just, you know, the old farmer in me who likes to complain. But when you have so many people, in the city and they're all voting, I mean, obviously that's addressed in some ways just by the geographical districts and, you know, how they're sort of designed to, there are enough rural districts that you are reflected, but even within some of those, you get the bigger cities and you have more people there who can vote, and just the attitudes of people who live in a city or in a more metropolitan area do seem to overpower the attitudes of people where, you know, maybe you don't have another neighbor for a kilometer. And so there just aren't as many people living in those conditions to vote and to have some of those experiences reflected.
I was just going to say that I think I think the argument that, you know, when parties can't find common ground, the government doesn't get anything done. I think that's a negative effect of first past the post. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, being able to overcome your differences and pass legislation and make concessions, I think, is an important part of politics, which we don't really do a lot right now. Mm-hmm. And I think having a minority government, whatever the electoral system that brings that, is actually good, because it forces people to find common ground, and you end up enacting legislation that is supported by not just the party that enacted it, but by other parties as well. And I mean, that's the point of government, right? To govern for everybody, not just the people that voted for them, in my opinion. But I mean, in reality, both systems have merit. They're both legit and they both work. They just represent different, you know, ideologies, and they both have different benefits and costs.
That's it for today's episode. Pro Bono Radio is brought to you by Queen's Faculty of Law, Pro Bono Students Canada, and with the generous support of CFRC, Queen's Campus Community Radio Station, broadcasting at 101.9 FM and online at cfrc.ca. The show was written and produced by the students of Queen's Law and is intended for entertainment purposes only. We are not lawyers. Nothing contained in the episode should be considered as legal advice. If you are in need of legal advice, please consult a lawyer. Pro Bono Radio is recorded at Queen's University, situated on traditional Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee territory.